Hello, and welcome to the monthly comic spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comics spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in March 2022. James, how you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, I have reworked my notes and stuff for these kinds of episodes. I actually played around with some Python. I've got it pillaging all my data, and we'll see if it's putting it into a very useful format for me to talk off of or not. Maybe not. So, we'll see. But it was fun to play with, if nothing else.
All right, cool. I'm interested to hear what you got.
Oh, I got this massive HTML file that's got all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, we'll see. So, breakdown of March, there were 5 shipping weeks.
Yes.
I got 88 comics for a total cover price of, I think, $391.08.
Oh, okay. And I was really close to you. I only think I got 91. I missed a few things, which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. But Eric's shipping those to me. Some damages happened. So
I was hit by a few things like that, too. So I've got a couple of things that as soon as he can get me a copy, he will.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I mean, there were some things when you were opening your box. I was like, oh, I didn't get that. He's like, yeah, that kind of happened.
Well, I think it's supply chain issues. I don't think the printers are as careful as they had been. In some cases, it may even be new and different printers and such.
Oh, yeah.
So I definitely think there's a number of things going on that's contributing to increased damages and late and missing issues and such.
You know what? Not to sidetrack too much, but there's something to that. There was a Hulk omnibus that came out, mm-hmm. and I'm part of these omnibus collector forums because I like the Omnibuy. And anyways, some of the people opened them up, and there's a printing error because I think they don't pay attention to stuff. Like some of the color plates were off, or the Hulk was orange in like the middle of the book.
Wow.
And they're like, people were opening it, they're like, half of them had green, half had orange, but it was bizarre.
That's insane.
Yeah, so people not watching what happens at the printers is a real thing. And if you don't crack your omnibus open and flip through it, you don't know.
Well, I think across all industries, there's a war for talent right now.
Oh, there really is. Yeah. And I'm wondering how much that hurts or helps DC. And I think it hurts them because they switch printers. You know, all the comics get printed in Canada pretty much. And DC, along with switching distributors to Lunar, they started printing with a company, I think, in Missouri at one point, and they had all kinds of issues around that.
Yeah, I think the war for talent hurts everybody. I think these kinds of mistakes hurt everybody.
Yep.
Because it doesn't make anyone look good.
No, it does not.
So, I mean, how could that possibly benefit somebody? Unless, I mean, maybe somebody who's flipping the ultra rare, you know, Orange Hulk variant of the omnibus or something, but I've got to imagine there's a short shelf life on that kind of flipping.
Exactly. You'd be like, oh, you got the orange one. I don't care about stuff like that, but somebody will. Who knows?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm with you. It's kind of like stuff happens, and I think all that stuff has a short shelf life. Like they had an X-Men issue where one guy did an anti-Semitic thing with a bat hit Kitty Pryde, you know? I that just came to my mind, but most people have forgotten about that, you know? Is mm-hmm. it a thing still? Who knows? Who knows?
Well, it was something that got a ton of discussion in the moment.
Yep.
And is no more right now than it was then, which was not at all.
Yep.
You know, but it's not the hot topic. It's not something that people are going to remember in the long haul. It may be something that, you know, gets a comment in the price guide or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much that's it.
But generally speaking, those kinds of things that become a big to-do cease being a big to-do after a fairly short shelf life. You know, whether it's something that, oh my God, it's the new appearance of thus and so, and it goes uber hot, or man, I can't believe they did this over in that book and it becomes, you know, vilified or what have you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, there's some stuff that is legitimately, it's going to be a hot character, so it is a big deal. And some of this, you know, they never should have done it to begin with, but there's so many new things coming down the pipeline that, you know, the attention span just isn't what it used to be.
I agree. I think so too. So. Yeah, it's interesting to see what will happen with stuff like that sometimes, but I think it kind of ultimately just goes away.
Yeah, I think there comes a point where nobody cares about what happened last year anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, whether it's a year, 10 years, 10 days, who knows?
Correct.
So, shall we take a look at what we got at DC?
Yeah, I already filtered my list.
Awesome. So for me, there were a couple of things that were at the top of the stack in terms of I just really enjoyed them. I don't know that any of these are going to be any sort of particular surprise for you.
I think I know one of them right off the bat.
Let's see if you can pick it.
Nightwing number 90?
Nightwing number 90, although we didn't have Bruno Redondo on the art.
Yeah, that was true. There's a different artist, but it was still really good.
It was really good. We got the Titans in there, so I was really happy with that.
Yep.
So yeah, that was definitely up there. Bet you can guess. I had three others. I bet you can guess them.
World's Finest?
Okay, maybe you can't guess them.
World's Finest.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, okay, so what are your others? Oh, Dark Knights of Steel, I'm guessing?
Yes, that was definitely one of them.
All right, you got to give me the other one, because I got my own, and I don't know if mine line up with yours.
Well, there was Superman Son of Kal-El, which was the
Son of Kal-El, yep.
Second part of the Nightwing crossover, and that's where Bruno Redondo was this month.
That's true.
So, great stuff there.
I agree.
And then the final issue of Batman Scooby-Doo Mysteries.
Oh, yeah, I don't get that. So, but I did have the Superman Son of Kal-El. That would have been like an A category book for sure.
Yeah, totally. I thought that was a ton of fun. It was good to see them team up. I'd like to find out Damian's reaction when he finds out they did team up like that.
Yeah.
And Damian would probably be more okay with it than if it was any of the other Robins, because he was Robin to Grayson's Batman. So, I mean, there's a certain, you know, forgiveness factor there, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of cool seeing him team up with a different Batman, though, you know, just because you had all those Super Sons books.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
With them being young and just to go a different direction. But it really worked. I thought it was a really good read.
Well, and I'm curious at this point what the age gap is between Nightwing and John Kent and John Kent and Damian.
Yeah, because he's been aged up. But how much aged up? Because they never say and we don't know.
Well, and how old do they consider Nightwing to be these days?
Yeah, no clue. No clue at all.
Curious about that. Now, on the Batman Scooby-Doo Mysteries, this was the final issue, and man, they had everybody under the bat signal in there.
Oh, yeah.
They found a very clever gimmick to just bring in everybody.
Interesting.
It was fun. It was.
Was it a splash page like George Perez type stuff, or?
It was basically a way to get these characters all tangentially involved in the story.
Okay, cool.
So it was basically, you know, how could this sort of thing happen? And it's like, oh okay, kind of makes sense.
Hey, I did have one question for you on the Superman Son of Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
Pink hair guy, who I can't remember his name. Boyfriend.
The boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah. Is that a new thing with him? Because I don't know the character at all, and him doing that Kitty Pryde stuff.
That character was introduced in this run a couple issues back. Maybe.
Okay, so this is the thing. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. I'll leave it there. I kind of spoiled it, but hopefully not too much.
Trying to remember the character's name, and I don't. That's how much of an impact he's had on me.
Yeah, I call him Pink Hair. So.
That or the boyfriend of the Son of Kal-El.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, those are the ones that at DC were kind of the big ones for me.
Yeah, no, those were good picks. Dark Knights of Steel number 5 was excellent, too.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic issue. They didn't paint the House of El in a good light, but we get to see some Poison Ivy in there and in the woods surrounding the kingdom, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
But the House of El is not looking too good right now.
Well, the whole thing's going in just all sorts of interesting and unexpected directions.
Yeah, I agree. I really love that series, so it's top-notch. If anyone is not reading it, even if you're not like a DC fan, it's a good read. You don't need to know DC lore to get something out of it, I think.
Yeah, if you know the big picture aspect, if you're vaguely familiar with the characters, that's enough.
Yeah, if you know Bruce Wayne and Superman, Kal-El, that's all you need to know, and you kind of roll with it from there.
If you have enough cultural literacy to be listening to and understanding this podcast, I think you've got enough knowledge of the DC universe to follow along with, this is who they're doing here and whatnot. And even if you don't, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Well, I did want to ask you about an issue which I didn't think was one of the best issues, but it was good. And it was kind of surprising to me. What did you think of the World's Finest thing?
The World's Finest stuff I liked. I thought it was good. It was a fun story. I was a little curious which of the Robins we had here, because there was a past sequence with the Penguin that seemed to be the original Robin, and then we've got a not-too-distant past with the Doom Patrol that seemed to be Tim. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but it would have been nice to know. And for that matter, it was fun to see the Doom Patrol get pulled back into use.
Very, very cool. And the thing that I did, I love the kinetic action. We were kind of thrown into the middle of something going on, but I was the same way. I was like, what's going on with the continuity here? Is this out of continuity, or what time frame is this happening in? Because I felt a little off balance as far as that goes. I didn't know if I'm supposed to read it as a book. I don't think it's happening now. Which Robin am I reading, you know?
I don't think it's happening now, because again, there was early in Batman's career.
Yeah, we got Alfred.
The not-too-distant past. So it's not today, but I do believe they're treating it as continuity.
Okay, so it isn't continuity. That's what I didn't know, because I'm like, is this just a pocket universe or something? So I'll take it as in the past.
They're saying it kicks off the next big events in the DCU, so I would assume it's in continuity. I mean, maybe they need to be saying when it's not.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, and if that's the case, I'm enjoying it. I thought it was cool. It was just a lot of action. I just didn't know where we're going right now.
Yeah, I thought it was very solid. No argument there.
Yeah, kind of like B-type material.
Yeah, that's exactly where I put it, B+.
Yeah. All right, and then anything else that you want to shout out before I go through some of the ones I liked?
I enjoyed the Aquaman Green Arrow Deep Target stuff.
Oh, yeah. And that was the last issue, wasn't it?
No, there's one more.
That's right, one more.
And they had a plot twist. It's like, I don't know where they're going next.
Yeah, one issue to get it wrapped up.
It's been fun. It's been interesting. And let's see. Second issue of Justice League versus Legion. Good, but a little slow, which is kind of typical for Bendis. But we're getting Legion, so I'm happy with that. Even if it's this Legion versus what I would consider to be the Legion. But, you know, hey, I'll take what I can get. And then the final issue of Static Season 1 I thought was a solid end of the arc. And if you like this, I think you should check out the original Static series.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned that, because I was reading the original stuff from the Milestones book that I had. And I like the characters, but I don't know if it's the same with the new stuff. Would you say the new stuff's better, the old stuff's better, or similar?
It's similar, but different. I think for Static and Icon, the characters ring true across versions.
Okay.
Obviously, the continuity's a little different. They've made some different decisions or whatnot, but if you like one, I think you'll like the other. I actually think Hardware's better this time around than before.
Okay.
But I was never a huge fan of the original Hardware.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I liked it. Hardware, just so you know, when you get that, if you ever had that compendium or if anybody got it out there, Hardware's like the first four issues they cover in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, I saw him as like, he almost had some Tony Stark mixed in with some other characters, you know, because of the building the suit.
Oh, yeah. You know, definitely an Iron Man riff.
Yeah, having the intelligence, but at the same time, but not the billionaire, you know, and having that is the great. But I mean, it was kind of cool. I'll tell you what, Icon's kind of like the Superman analog, and then Static I really liked. Those other ones, I really did not care for them, and I do not think they revisited them in this current thing. It was called Zombie, and I can't remember the other one. Blood Syndicate. I didn't care for either one of those.
They're starting up a Blood Syndicate series.
Oh, okay.
Six-issue arc.
Hopefully they do better with it this time, because those just did not interest me at all.
I can understand that.
Yeah, but the other three I thought were terrific. Mm-hmm. So, but good reads. Now, one thing, there were some things that I did enjoy that I know you're not getting. One was Nice House on the Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really good. It's back and good. They took a hiatus for probably a couple months. We get some character backstory. The team's moving towards, you know, seeing how far they can push their request. They're in this house and they can put in kind of requests and things show up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learn a lot on the background of the character who invited them all to the nice house.
Cool.
And then, so that was cool. Did you get Rogues? It was like one of those big, I think, Black Label magazine type things.
I did not. The solicitation I found a little off-putting. It seemed like they were going to go in maybe either a different or darker direction than I felt the Flash Rogues gallery should go in.
Okay, I don't know how dark it's going to go, but I did pick it up. And yeah, so they took the whole Rogues, you know, the Flash's Rogues gallery, and they're down on their luck, you know, they kind of look aged and they're just, you know, life's not treating them good. They're just in a bar. And it gets around the getting the team back together with a Snart or Captain Cold.
Yeah.
And then there's a big caper that he wants to take on. It's like, oh, there was one last big heist that I wanted to do. So it's kind of cool. It hasn't gotten that dark, but it could in the next two issues. So I don't know what's going to happen with it, because it being Black Label, it very likely could. But this one, I don't think was that dark. It was kind of like a heist type thing.
I forget what it was. There was something about it. It's like, yeah, I don't need that.
Okay, cool.
And I'm a fan of The Flash and his rogues gallery. So
now, did you read Shadow War Alpha, right?
I did.
And neither one of us are getting all the titles, but what did you think of the Alpha thing?
Well, I stopped reading Deathstroke Inc. after the first few issues.
And me too.
I picked this up because I'm curious about the art, because I'm getting enough titles. But like you said, I'm not getting all of it, so, you know, I'm going to pick up the parts of the titles I was getting anyways. It was an okay start, but they made a move that seems like something that will definitely be undone.
Yeah.
Maybe as part of Dark Crisis, maybe as part of something else, but it's like, I don't believe that's a permanent status quo change. I don't think it should be.
You can't start like that, I don't think. They kind of went too far.
Well, yeah, I think there's a part of storytelling where, again, you overplay your hand, and it just, there's certain things you just can't do in a shared universe of corporate-owned creations, or corporate-owned entities. And I mean, obviously, they were created by people who had to give them to the corporation, but long story anyways. Killing off various characters, making certain permanent marks on them and such, I think is a little, I don't say egotistical of the creators, but certainly short-sighted on the editor's part.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And that, all that being said, it was an enjoyable read. I liked it. I just think what you said, they almost have to undo it pretty soon. The one thing I did like about the book, I like the characterization around Damien, you know, and the love and care he has for mom and the grandparents and stuff like that. So I thought that was really cool. And there's a lot of action around it, so that made it fun. But I was with you. I read it, and I was like, they're going to have to reel this back. How soon are they going to do it?
Yeah, yeah. To me, that was just a given.
Yeah, so I'm like, eh. What about Naomi number one? Did you get that?
I did get that, and this is the second season of it.
Yeah.
The recap of Essentials for people new to Naomi, I appreciate that. But it was kind of a slow issue. Again, as I said not long ago, it's common for Bendis. I don't dislike the character, but I don't think the character is as big of a deal in the grand scheme of things as Bendis and DC are trying to make the character.
I agree. I think they're trying to make her a thing, and she's just not there. In this book with Bendis, he did okay with the writing, but I felt like the art was the star of the book. The art was better than the writing.
Oh, Jamal Campbell, so yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, hey, with this art, that's top-notch art. But then with the writing, I was just like, it was a lot of dialogue, you know, the therapist to get you caught up, and the ending didn't excite me. I was like, okay, all right. And I don't think it'll go much. It'll probably be like a short miniseries, but I think this character will fizzle out with Bendis.
Yeah, probably, because right now the character has had, and I'd have to double check this, but I think more television episodes than solo comic book issues.
Wow.
Well, I mean, this is issue number one of the second miniseries. The first one went six, so it's the seventh issue.
Yep.
And, I mean, she's shown up in Wonder Comics over in, I guess it was the Young Justice title over there for a little bit as kind of a glorified guest star. And the Wonder Comic stuff that was kind of spearheaded by Bendis, even if he didn't write that particular title at the time.
Yeah.
And then he's used her over in Justice League, but I don't know how many other creators have used the character at all. And it just feels very much like when Marvel was really trying to put the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel as the next big thing. And it's like, yeah, keep using her, put her out there and stuff, and okay, but either it resonates with the audience or it doesn't. And I didn't see it with that character. I'm not seeing it yet here.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure this character speaks to a segment of the audience. No question about that. But to get a TV show when, you know, again, off a six-issue solo run versus other characters that have been around 60 years, doesn't make sense to me.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I read the character because I was there from the beginning, which is kind of nice, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's enjoyable enough, but it's not, you know, definitely not the best. It's like something that's okay to good. And then I use my wife as a gauge for these new things. Like, because when the Naomi TV series came out, we recorded, you know, a few episodes. And after like 2, 3, 4 episodes, she's like, this is boring. I don't like it. And she doesn't know anything about comics, really. She doesn't.
Yeah.
Other than like the MCU and the DC movies. And she's just like, I don't like this. This is boring. And I was just like, that's telling to me as far as like, she likes The Flash. She likes Legends of Tomorrow. She does not like this one. I was like, they're pushing it, but I don't think it's hitting as well as some of the other things are.
Interesting. I've been letting that stack up on the DVR until the season ends. And then my sister and I will go through it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what her take is going to be on it, because I'm sure she's going to ask, well, you know, where's the character been used in the comics? And I'm like, not that much.
Hardly at all. Whatever Bendis is writing at the time, she pops up.
This, frankly, is not much more of a DC character than half the Legends of Tomorrow, which were, you know, written specifically for the show.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's just, again, DC's got a wealth of characters that I'd love to see on TV.
Yeah. I would love to see Hawkman, honestly. The Hawk people.
We got those early on with the Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Flash and such. But yeah, there's a ton of characters they could do some fun stuff with.
Yeah, I just like to see a whole series around them, but I don't think they could hold a series, but just me.
Now, I'm going to hold off really on any judgment on the first volume. I mean, I read it when it came out, but the first issue just hit at the complete wrong time for me. And that's one of the things we've got as a upcoming back issue spotlight that we're going to do. So I'm going to wait till I reread it for that and see if reading it in a better frame of mind will help, and also in a single shot versus as it was getting doled out month to month.
Yeah, there's a big difference I'm noticing when I read things.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's all together or spread out over 6 months. Now, okay, another one that I wanted to ask you about, because I have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got the ending of the whole Detective Comics 1055 through 1058. What did you think of that whole, what was it called? The Arkham Tower or whatever?
The House of Gotham, or was that the backup feature? What, the shadow, the whole mess of it?
Yeah, whatever. It was Shadow of the Bat. I can't remember what.
Well, let's see. For 1055, I mean, the Neverending Saga was continuing, and the story just jumped around a ton.
Yeah.
Wasn't sure when the backup was taking place, and didn't really think one of the characters in that installment was likely to survive the next chapter of the backup, and I'm pretty sure I was right about that. With 1056, again, the thing just kept going. And I don't say that in a good way.
Yeah.
The time inconsistencies in that particular issue with, like, how long it took Nightwing to fall down an elevator shaft and get caught versus what was going on with, like, the Huntress at the same time. Like, time dilation's pretty severe in this building.
Yeah.
So that was annoying. And then with the backup, it's like they keep building this kid up. I don't know it's going to have the payoff. It was either it's not going to have the payoff, or they're going to force him on us as some major new threat, and it's like, I don't think that's going to work. Then when we got to 1057, I was not expecting the final page reveal. I don't think it lined up with how certain things were happening elsewhere in the DC universe. And I was ready for the story to end with the next issue. And then the backup, it's like, what, another time jump? No sign of the kid? I mean,
what's going on?
But yeah, what the hell?
Yeah. Exactly.
And then by the time we finally get to 1058, far too long in the making, I felt neither the main story nor the backup landed the ending.
No, they failed. They completely failed.
The main story felt like a ton of exposition to explain the story they just told.
Exactly.
Never a good sign. And I was confused given where the previous issue left off with, like, you're picking up here. You teased that you were going in one direction, and then it's, oh yeah, just kidding, never mind. That irritated the hell out of me. And then the backup ended in a way that made that entire backup feature seem completely pointless in the grand scheme of things, and the ultimate in forgettable stories, which would be okay if it was a good story,
but
I think you can pick up on how I've talked about this last, quarter of the 12-issue arcs of these things?
It's not a good story.
It was not a good story. Not at all.
The funny thing was, I started noticing, I started putting little barks in here. I was realizing that the main story was ending right around the staple mark, you know, the halfway through the book. And that backup feature was taking up the other half. So we were only getting not even, you know, normally they give you like the little backup that's like 8 to 10 pages. This was half the book and it was horrible.
I wasn't even paying attention to the relative page counts.
Yeah, I was just like, why are they only giving us half the main story to draw it out over 12 issues and make it weekly? And it was just, it felt like just a failed exercise. And I left the book feeling like, I need Mariko Tamaki, I think that's her name,
yeah,
off this title. Please, please change.
Well, and I'm pretty sure, well, no, I was going to say, my new notes are actually highlighting when we get writer changes on upcoming stuff. And the problem with that, though, is I think Mariko Tamaki's staying on the lead. I think we're getting a new person for a new backup feature.
Oh, great.
Because I think we get Gotham Girl Interrupted, part one of who knows how many.
36 parts, who knows?
Six is too many.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of frustrating. I mean, like, I had more frustration. Like, that was a title I'm just not happy with. Like, Detective Comics and then Flash 780, I wasn't reading the War for Earth 3, so I didn't know what was going on, really, with Flash 780, because it was tying into that. Did you like it?
I read the whole War for Earth 3 stuff. And we'll talk about this, and then we'll jump to the rest.
Okay.
This was more of a Flash issue than part of the crossover story. This blacksmith character I didn't recognize, but I could just have forgotten who they were. Surprised to see an intact cosmic treadmill, even in the Flash Museum, but it was just a fake copy. It's like, okay, so whatever. This was a tie-in. It wasn't a chapter of the crossover.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I was frustrated by all of that. I thought there was a nice tribute to Brian Augustin by Mark Waid, both of whom are longtime Flash writers and such. I felt it was extraneous for the most part to the War for Earth 3. And I thought the War for Earth 3 was okay. I mean, we get the first part of the two-issue framing sequence out of a five-issue total story. So why they just didn't do it as a miniseries, don't know, but okay. Amanda Waller wants Earth 3 as a power base, and she's got a plan for dealing with Ultraman. Okay, let's see how well that works out. From there, it went over to, where did it go next? Was it Titans Academy, or I didn't think to, I really should have had my notes tell me what order these things came out. What was the second part of this story?
Oh, I can't remember for the life of me. You're
well, I'll talk about them out of order then.
Yeah.
When I got to Titans Academy 13, whatever part of it was, which was near the end, I thought it was a worthless crossover, not a great issue of Titans Academy. So skip that one entirely.
All right.
There was also, what other parts of this were there? Man, I'm totally blanking on this.
It's okay. The War for Earth 3 thing, I didn't even read. So I was just
The story ended in the second issue of War for Earth 3. It didn't conclude. And I'm like, where, when, and if this is going to play out further, I don't know. I am curious, but it basically was a complete swing and a miss on the whole thing.
Which is kind of depressing.
Yeah, yeah. I think they could have and should have done better on this.
Now, one thing I was going to tell you, I read Joker number 13. I know you're not reading the Joker series. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I feel like, I think issue 13 is the last one. I think it is. It could be the 14th. I honestly don't know. But the series is kind of be done. It was okay. It started off really strong and it got weaker as it went. But kind of like the whole thing spilling out of it is we got Vengeance, which is Bane's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the whole, so the new character.
She's actually not new, I don't think. I thought we'd gotten her before.
I honestly don't know. I have never read her, so I thought she was a new character in this Joker series, but I honestly have no clue. So I thought she was new, but maybe not.
I could be wrong. And yeah. By the way, Suicide Squad was the other part of the War for Earth 3.
Oh, yeah, you're not reading that either.
It was the second chapter. It was okay. I really didn't care for the cutting back and forth in time. I mean, just tell the damn thing in a linear manner and be done with it.
Exactly.
Overall, the War for Earth 3 was okay, but not great.
All right. Not better than bad, which was Detective Comics' big event.
Yes, it was better than that. I think this is all in the bottom echelon of a B kind of category.
Yeah. All right. Now, one thing that came out, which I know you're probably not getting, is Batman Beyond the White Knight.
Correct.
It's that whole Sean Murphy thing.
Yeah.
And what's weird is I kind of got burnt out on the whole thing, but I bought all the other series, so I'm buying this one. Just, I don't know, have that completist mentality. Maybe I'll finish it. But the series is good enough, okay, but it's starting to lose me. It's an alternative world. Harley's a mom with a teenage daughter. And so it was more dealing with that type of stuff, which is weird. And then the other one that I was going to tell you that I liked, but I'm not sure, I'm thinking you probably didn't like, was Action 1041.
Action 1041, slow lead story. Superman was barely in it. If I want a Midnighter story, I mean, there are other places I can go.
Yeah, it was a Midnighter story. Midnighter getting brutal.
Yeah, and the backup, I still despise with a passion the white text on a bright green captions.
I hate that too.
It is hard for my aging eyes to read.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I like Martian Manhunter, so I'm okay with him getting the backup feature. But, yeah, to me, that was passable, but, I mean, not great.
Yeah, I knew you weren't going to like it. It's kind of this weird thing that I'm liking this whole Gladiator vibe. And that's just something with me that resonates with me. And I don't know how many people are going to like it. But I like the basically we focus on Midnighter and he's much more violent than Superman. You start breaking people out of the prisons, uprising, trying to save Apollo. And then you got this Gladiator Superman. I was like, that's awesome.
How ironic is it that they're doing a John Carter of Mars riff on Superman with the Martian Manhunter as the backup?
That's hilarious, yeah. It's so true. Oh, I didn't even think about that until you said that. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah, so if you like John Carter, you might like Action Comics.
Maybe. Because
they're doing it here.
This is not what I want with my Superman.
No, it's definitely not a Superman story. I had fun with it when I read it for what it was, but I'm like, I just have this undeniable thought in the back of my mind. I'm like, when are they going to kill him right now? And I know that's dark to say.
Does it matter?
Probably not. But I think that's what they're going to do. And then the whole crisis is going to happen. Then someone will come back from the dead. And
well, I mean, that's the concern I've got. Are these books starting to enter a lame duck period because Dark Crisis is coming and may reshape the entire universe yet again?
I think so. I feel it. Right now. How about you?
I don't think there's a good answer to that question is the problem.
Yeah.
Because I think they need to retool stuff pretty severely, but I think that just further unravels the DC mythos.
Yeah.
But I think that ship has sailed and sunk a few times, and every time they try to fix it, they just scorch the earth a bit more.
Very true. Very true. So I'm waiting. I'm not going to say with a lot of anticipation, but kind of with some anticipation on this Dark Crisis to see what happens, to see your thoughts.
I'm very curious how it plays out. And it's funny because, I mean, we got Justice League Incarnate number 5, and it was a story that didn't land the ending, but the story continues in a few months in Justice League 75, which then again continues off in Dark Crisis. And it's like, they've been doing the wind-up for this event for better part of a year now. And it's like, is it going to pay off? Is it going to pan out? I don't know. I'd love it if it did. I'm not going to say I'm overly optimistic that it will.
Well, there has been one change in the DC universe that I don't know how it'll affect it, but AT&T is no longer the owner. So the Warner Brothers Discovery stock went public 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's official. The stock is being sold right now. Fingers crossed something good happens.
Until they get a solid editor-in-chief,
yeah,
and somebody as chief creative officer, and those two people can really make sure the books come out on time with great talent and are telling great stories, it doesn't matter if they do another crisis or not.
Yeah, and not to be insulting, but I feel like Jim Lee's not the best editor-in-chief.
Well, he's not editor-in-chief.
Oh, who's editor-in-chief right now? Oh, yeah, he's a...
He's publisher.
Publisher.
Is...
I'm sorry. Who is it right now? I don't even know.
I'm blanking on it. That's how low of a profile the editor-in-chief has kept.
All right, I'm going to go.
Bob Harris?
Maybe.
I want to say Bob Harris, but substitute in the name of the Invisible Man, because that's literally, as editor-in-chief, he's had nothing to say, ever, as far as I recall.
Oh.
And, I mean, I remember growing up that the editors-in-chief... We're doing, the equivalent of the Stan Lee cheerleading of here's where we're going, here's why we're going this way, and it's going to be great.
Well, I did a search on Google, and it says it's Marie Javins. No clue who that is.
I think she actually got it recently, now that I think about it. She
Yeah.
was the one who I think shepherded the convergence crossover stuff to bridge the gap of them moving.
Yeah, so I've never even heard of her, so
And I've heard of her. I don't know any pros and cons or whatever, but you
me
need
neither.
a editor in chief who can keep the books running and get all that going, but who can also make sure they're telling good stories that aren't going to tank their continuity in the long haul.
Yeah.
You know, if you're telling stories that, as a reader, I know you're going to undo, or 2 years from now, nobody's going to remember. Aquaman, Green Arrow, Deep Target, as much as I'm enjoying that series, 2 years from now, it's going to be, oh yeah, I guess they did publish that. And
Yeah.
it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Not
No, it
everything
doesn't.
has to, but enough things have to that people want to come back for more.
Yeah. I actually heard believe it or not, I think it was 11 O'Clock Comics. I listened to a few comic podcasts and I was listening to that one. And, you know, sometimes I agree with some of the stuff they say. Sometimes I'm just like, you know, don't agree with it, but whatever. You know, I'm just listening.
Different people, different thoughts. That's cool.
Yeah, but they were saying, you know, and it's true. I started thinking about it. You know, when Lee and Ditko and Kirby and name the whole plethora of comic creators, when they were creating this stuff back in the day, they had no idea this would be more than a flash in the pan for maybe 10 years. And before we moved back to Westerns or to this or to that, superheroes were kind of like the in thing at the time when they created it.
Well, it depends which group of founding fathers you're talking about for that. I think for the Marvel ones, there was an aspect of we're going to try something, see if it works. If it does, great. If not, again,
Yeah.
Westerns, space, whatever. But even at that point, there was the realization Captain America and Superman had already been around 2 decades.
Yeah, they came and they kind of did the World War II thing, and then they kind of got shuffled
Well,
away a little bit, but not a lot.
that's the thing, is like Superman had stuck around.
That one had,
Captain
yes.
Marvel had stuck around. Batman had stuck around. So it's not to say that it's a foregone conclusion. This is all just going to play out in 2, 3 years and we're done.
Yeah, no. What they were getting is they're like, I don't think they had the foresight. They were just talking about this to think that these creations, you know, 60 years from now, that what we're doing now is going to be impacting what stories 60, 70 years from now. You know, but with
Agreed.
your yeah, with your ma manga stories or manga that you're reading, My Hero Academia has started. It will end. There will be like a volume 100
Yeah,
or volume 80.
but that's
And it just
a
goes away.
continuity, a story. It's not a shared universe.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't think the founding fathers, particularly at Marvel, were thinking this is going to go on for decades and decades and going to be one of the biggest movie franchises ever.
Correct. Yeah.
I
And
think some of the
that's what we're
people.
running into now, right? We're it's been around, and how do we work with that, you know?
Yeah, but I think part of the problem is some of these people think it is going to be around forever and ever and be, you know, the linchpin of the movie franchise, you know, at some point.
Yeah.
And it's like, tell some really solid stories first.
Yeah, I
Build
agree.
up a universe that's really compelling and cohesive, because if you're going to do a shared universe, do a shared universe. If not, that's great. That you don't have to.
Exactly.
But I look at what's going on in Titans United versus what's going on in Teen Titans Academy. It's not the same Titans, even though they look to be. And it's like, this is annoying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they're on Teen Titans Academy, they're going down a path that is one, oh my God, they're gonna have to backpedal on.
Yeah, I'm not reading it, so I don't know, but they've changed a lot.
Well, they're starting to make a change. They teased in Future State. And I'm like, as an alternate future, yeah, maybe. As an actual, you're going to do this in the main continuity? Oh, no.
You know, I honestly think that Tom King is writing these pocket universe stories now because they've realized the damage that they let him do,
Yeah.
and they don't know how to fix it. And so he's been kind of relegated to, he does these 12-issue stories, but they're not necessarily in continuity now. Oh yeah, here's a story, and that's
But
just his
if
story.
they're of the main characters and not in continuity,
What's the point?
I have problems with that.
Yeah.
All right, we've been ranting and raving about DC for a while. Should we flip over to Marvel?
Yeah, poor Marvel. No, we're giving her no attention.
Well, for me, the top book of the month was Captain Carter. I thought that was just a fun read. It was, you know, unsurprisingly, a riff on Captain America, but she gets out of the ice in the present day after 80 years. Art could have been a little tighter, told the story fine. but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a ton of fun.
I enjoyed it too, and believe it or not, I did not have that picked to be on my pull list, and I heard your preview spotlight clip, and I added it.
Mm, cool. So glad you enjoyed it.
So thank you for recording that clip, because I wouldn't have picked up the book otherwise.
That's why I do the clips.
All right. My top book, I'm going through my scores right now, and I found it right here. Maestro World War M number 2 was my top pick, but I'm a Hulk sucker. But I thought it was a pretty epic story. It shows the reader that Peter David's able to change with the times and stay relevant. We got a book from Larry Hama, and he writes, you know, the same as he ever did. Ennis writes kind of the same that same way he used to. But Peter's really changed up his writing style. He's evolved, because I was reading the old omnibus of Peter David, and he's writing the same characters but making it fresh.
Yeah.
And not every writer can do that. And so this is definitely my hats off to you, Mr. David. But he's writing about the characters he wrote in the 80s and 90s. It's feels modern. Maestro could have been a peaceful guy, but he goes after the Abomination and Namor.
And I just reread Hulk Future Imperfect with Sam for a back issue spotlight, and Maestro was a piece of work back then.
Yeah, he was.
And it's funny, because that was from 1992, which is kind of the end of the Maestro story. This is the third miniseries they've done, and all of it, you know, back with Maestro, followed by War and Pax or whatever, and now World War M, is kind of the beginning of the story, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought this was a fun read. I was surprised the Hulk could breathe underwater, but okay. I was shocked that the Android Human Torch did not know who Dr. Doom is. Granted, some time has elapsed, but come on.
For me, the pinnacle of the book was, you know, with Namor sitting there and saying, hey, I wasn't part of the Illuminati. I wasn't trying to send you off world. Let's live in peace and have a good time. And what do you think Maestro's going to do?
I thought Namor was part of the Illuminati at that point. At the very least, he wasn't part of the group that shot the Hulk into space.
Yeah. He was giving this whole speech about, you know, with his family, you know, oh, I'm not a bad guy. Let's live in peace here. And yeah, you're not going to live in peace with Maestro. So I just thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm loving this book.
Definitely some good stuff.
Now, I wanted to ask you something, because something came out, which I guess is controversial, but I don't think it should have been. Punisher number 1. You're not a Punisher fan, right?
I'm not particularly a Punisher fan. I've read some runs of Punisher, but I did not pick this one up.
Okay, this one, I Jason Aaron wrote it, and Jason Aaron is doing a horrible job with the Avengers. I'll just state that. He does better with the single character books. I really think so. Like, he does a really good Thor, but you throw the Avengers and all those characters in, and he falls on his face for whatever reason. But Punisher number 1, I really like the title. I think Ennis and Punisher Max is probably the best Punisher out there, but this one's good for different reasons. So they redid the whole symbol, you know, the Devil's Reign, and we talked about that on the Slack channel and stuff like that. But with this, they've also taken the character, they've tied in some of the Hand, they've tied in some ninjas.
And not for the first time. I think he's been poked with them before.
Yes. And then they've also kind of presented him with a katana, which I thought was very clever. It's cool. People are saying, ah, this isn't the Punisher. They change his symbol. He doesn't have guns. It's like, you know, some kind of like communist statement. I'm like, no. It's tying into the lore and to the background. And they took him and they're kind of making him into this like almost like a different type of character. They're putting a Japanese spin on it, and that symbol that they have is almost like the same symbol of a Japanese demon. So I thought it was very clever, because now the symbol makes sense to me. I'm like, ah. So I thought it was a good read. I thought it was really clever, and I don't think it was controversial at all.
Well, they needed to change up the iconography of the character and retool him a little bit, given how it's been used in the mass public and such.
Exactly. It's been kind of politicized. So now I don't think you can do that. But I'll tell you what, the last page in this thing, and I'll tell you about it afterwards if you want to know, I was like, whoa, it's like a what the hell moment. You're just a shock and awe. You're like, whoa. So the last page was very explosive.
Cool.
Yeah. So, but I won't, we're not going to spoil it. We'll talk off the record.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else is good?
I'm sorry. I was going to let you go. I could ramble on for an hour, but.
Oh, same here. Fantastic Four 41. I thought that was some good stuff.
That's the one I'm missing, and I'm getting it soon.
Oh.
Tell me, how was it? Because I got the new one in my last shipment, but what? Tell me
about
it.
I'll give you three words.
Okay.
Very epic issue.
Oh, and that's the one I'm missing. Okay. Oh, now I'm frustrated.
Did you get Reckoning War Trial of the Watcher?
I did. What did you think of that?
I thought it was a fairly interesting what-if story.
I liked it, yeah.
Probably skippable in the grand scheme of things, but fun.
It was fun. I liked how it showed, yeah, what if he had not interfered? Because mm-hmm. he has interfered. What happens with the future? I thought that was so clever, and it was a really good issue. And I could see them making a what-if cartoon episode on that.
Only if they do it as the final episode of What If.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It's the kind of story that seemed like it should have ended the original What If run that went for like a... Actually, the original one went for 47 issues. It's the second run, I think, that went for 120 or something. But that's the kind of thing, at the end of it, it's, yeah, what if the Watcher just, you know, left everything alone? You know?
You're like, what?
Be a funny end cap. But I thought they told a good story there.
Now, another one that I really enjoyed, but I know you're not getting, is Thor 23. Of mm-hmm. course, I always like Thor. Excellent story. Art is really not that great by Nick Klein, but the story was just great. The power that Thor wields is basically the all power as he faces the God of Hammers. And I don't want to spoil it. I can't say too much, but he's basically taken on, you know, Odin's powers,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't have all of Odin's power. And that's what this story was about. And it was pretty epic and it was great. And I loved it.
Cool.
Yeah. So what else did you like?
Oh, there's two I want to talk about. I thought they were both good. I'm not going to say they were brilliant.
Okay.
I think What If Miles Morales number one was a little better than Spider-Gwen Gweniverse number one.
Okay.
But both of them are taking those characters and doing kind of a multiversal story of, well, what if Gwen was, you know, a Captain America or an Iron Man or whatever, or what if Miles was? And I kind of find these concepts, you know, alternate universe type stuff, fun. I think they did a better job on the What If Miles Morales than the Spider-Gwen Gweniverse, but not by, like, tons.
Cool.
For the Miles Morales one, there is a parody, you know, one, not one shot, but like one page thing waiting to be done, where we visit the metric Marvel universe and meet Kilometer Morales versus Miles Morales.
Yeah.
Didn't land that joke. All right, moving on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I don't know where they're going, and I think doing both of those miniseries at the same time with the same basic riff, interesting choice. I'm not sure it was a great one, but they're fun.
I was stepping on my headset cord at the time when you said that. I was like, ah.
Ah, okay. That's your story, and you're sticking to it.
Yeah. I'll tell you something that I liked. Were you reading? Well, you didn't read. There's Ghost Rider, Black Panther. You're not reading either one of those,
nope.
Are you? Okay.
No.
I thought they were terrific. I won't go into the Ghost Rider thing very much because I know you don't like the demons and the graphic. There's an eyeball popping out of the wound.
Yeah, I didn't need to hear that.
Dark Ages, number six. Did you like that? It was the final episode or issue.
I liked it. It's funny because the ending resolved everything, but it was a little less than satisfying. It wasn't bad, but I guess I expected or wanted more than I felt I got out of it.
It felt like it ended really quick, didn't it?
Quick and again, unsatisfyingly, even though they resolved things.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of like, you get Deadpool kind of becoming a hero that I was like, ah, all right. But his quips with Jessica Jones were kind of funny when that happened. But yeah,
yeah.
It was the way it happened. I was just like, ah, that's interesting. But I don't know if I liked it or didn't like it. I felt kind of ambivalent to it.
Exactly.
Like how they ended it. I was like, ah,
They didn't flop the ending, but they didn't ace it either. And I'd be hard-pressed to articulate what I felt was missing.
Okay.
It resolved it, it concluded it, so it's not like, oh, you left things undone or something like that. But I didn't come out of it thinking, wow, that was a really great story either.
Yeah, I felt like the last issue was one of the weaker ones out of the series.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately. Now, one that you weren't reading, which I thought was very good. Okay, and I've read the last issue because I did read my shipment in April, so spoiler alert, no. Devil's Reign number 5 came out, and that's one I would have given like an A. We get Jessica Jones and many of the Champions members facing off against the Thunderbolts in there, which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
They're going after some kids, the purple kids, the Purple Man's kids. I don't, whatever they're called.
Purple Kids is as good a name as any.
Yeah, Purple Kids. And we get Mayor Fisk going after Matt Murdock, or Murdock, but it's not Matt, it's Mike. And so you have an interesting thing that happens in there. And I'm curious how this is going to play out, because they have the Devil's Reign number 6 and they have the fallout from it. But I think this was a big, you know, way to maybe a shock issue, maybe a big thing happened here. And I can tell you about that off the out of this recording if you want to know.
Yeah, I didn't pick up the Devil's Reign series itself. I did pick up a few of the side series.
Yeah, and you'd liked some of those, I think.
Let's see. Devil's Reign Spider-Man number 1, I thought was okay. It was fun. It made me realize how much was happening in Devil's Reign that I was just unaware of.
Yeah.
So that was good in that respect. Devil's Reign Superior 4, that was the end of that. It was unsatisfying because it didn't really end. It's just, well, we're stopping here. It's going to go continue in Devil's Reign. It's like, but I'm not reading that. So you
didn't get a full story.
Yes and no. I kind of did, kind of didn't. Ultimately, I should have skipped it.
Okay, makes sense.
And then there was the Devil's Reign X-Men stuff. We got issues 2 and 3. I thought it was enjoyable. It worked as a standalone story. Maybe not essential reading, but it was fun, and it was worth it.
That's kind of how I felt. I got that one. I didn't get the Spider-Man one or the 4, but I did get the X-Men one. I thought it was a good story, but yeah, you didn't have to read it, so it didn't mess up Devil's Reign for me. The only thing that didn't make sense in Devil's Reign is when those characters showed up, all the octopus characters. I was like, where'd they come from? And I was like, oh yeah, I didn't buy that miniseries.
Well, and I had the flip side. I knew where they came from. I just didn't know where they went. And yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I got to see the conclusion to them. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, well, two other things. Ah, no, three. All right, I'm just going to keep at.
Three, let's make it four. No, five. How about...
Okay, we got Immortal X-Men number 1 came out.
Yes.
You got that. I saw that in your list. What did you think of that?
I am not a huge fan of Mr. Sinister, who narrated the issue.
Okay.
But it was a decent read with an interesting reveal at the end, and overall I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked this one a lot. What was funny is I felt like they were setting up this book to be like, I hate to use this term, but like the flagship of the X-Books. I felt like that's what they're setting up like to be like the Hickman-type book.
Potentially.
Even more so than the X-Men. That's how I felt when I was reading it. So I was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, a lot happens. You know, you get the Moira stuff, Charles Xavier, Magneto alignment's been blown up, but we get Moira on the run. You get, you know, Magneto stuff happening with the council. You get all kinds of interesting things going on there, drama and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Mr. Sinister becomes kind of interesting in his position in the book, what he gets to decide. And the ending, I was just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought it was kind of cool. I think this is going to be, if you're an X fan, this will be the flagship book, the one that's going to have the most impact.
Definitely one to be checking out. I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I felt. Now, the other ones I want to ask you about, She-Hulk, are you liking that, or did you not get that? Or
I'm enjoying it. I thought it was good. Not a ton happened in it, and the final page was kind of a non-reveal thing.
Yeah.
So, am I going to stay on this book for the long haul? Don't know. But, you know, we'll see how long it lasts.
I felt like I didn't like it as much as the first, but it's still, it's kind of like that solid title.
Yeah.
The writer I don't trust in, so we'll see how far I go with this. And then also the other new books that came out, if you want to call them new books, there was a Venom Lethal Protector and a Wolverine Patch. I think you got Wolverine Patch, didn't you?
I skipped both.
Oh, okay.
I was never a big fan of the Patch era of Wolverine.
I read it, and I...
Oh, I read the whole era. I just wasn't a big fan.
That's the way I was, too. I was like, it wasn't my favorite version of, you know, characterization of Wolverine, but it's kind of retro, that late 80s, early 90s. And then you had Larry Hama writing a Patch story, and it felt so retro. Like, he hasn't updated his writing style. It was decent, but I was just like, it may be one that I didn't need to read. And the Venom Lethal Protector, it was the same thing. They're going back to the 90s. And they brought back the writer from back then and everything. And so it's enjoyable, but it's more like that nostalgia with those books. And I wasn't feeling like I needed to be nostalgic, so I kind of regret picking up both of them.
Well, and it goes back to what you're saying about Peter David on Maestro.
Yeah.
It's pulling stuff from the 90s, but it's got a modern flavor to it.
Yeah, versus I felt like I pulled up an old issue, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, here's this old book. And I'm like, oh, I'm reading a back issue spotlight book. But it's weird how some of the writers, that's why I felt it. Those guys have not updated, whereas Peter David has refreshed himself and kept himself fresh. So yeah. I appreciated that. And one book that I really regretted getting, I picked up X-Men Unlimited Latitude. I did not realize it was a digital comic. It was Hickman was the writer. It was not good. It was $5.99 and it read, I could read the whole thing in like 5 minutes and it was pretty horrible.
Wow. I skipped that one.
Yeah. I wish I would have read the solicit better. I just saw Hickman, X-Men, and I picked it up and I regret my decision.
There was one or two I kind of regretted, although I don't know that I necessarily, well, I don't know if I could have picked it out ahead of time that way. Obviously I didn't because I got it. Hulk Grand Design number one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did get that. What did you think of that?
I felt like it was a cut-and-paste overview of the Hulk's history.
Yep.
It did not read well for me at all.
No, it was horrible, I thought. I hate saying that.
It felt like it was truer to the continuity for at least the part I could read through, because there came a point where it's like, yeah, I'm done reading. I'll flip at this point. Then the Fantastic Four one, where I felt they took major liberties as to what the story had been.
Yeah.
I really think the X-Men stuff by Ed Piskor, that was brilliantly done.
That was brilliant, and it made it make sense, the X-Men's background.
Yeah, and I think they could continue it for another few volumes because there's a lot more X history to be had. Whereas this, oh man, they covered 300 issues of the Hulk, I believe. And there were some places where it's like, oh, okay, you've got a touch base because you've got like the cover or something like that. I know where we're at the history now, but I couldn't read the thing.
I couldn't either. I literally, me being ADD, I started reading, and after a few panels, my mind's wandering.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's not a good sign, where I'm thinking of something else, but my eyes are reading it, and I'm just like, I can't read it. It does not work for me.
The design elements took over, and it ceased to be a comic book story early on for me.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
So I was disappointed with that.
Yeah, so... Yeah, the X-Lives and X-Deaths of Wolverine ended, and that was kind of like, I felt like the death part was much better than the life part, but neither one of them were brilliant.
I enjoyed both. They were very different. The X-Lives, they kept cross-cutting between time frames, which got really annoying really quick.
Mm-hmm.
I was really curious how that would read in a chronological order, if it would have any semblance there at all. And then X-Lives of Wolverine number 5... I think should have been before the X-Deaths of Wolverine number 4, not after it, so the timing on that was a little unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I thought that series was all right. X-Deaths of Wolverine, though, there was some interesting stuff in there. The third issue worked really well for me. The fourth absolutely did not work for me. It was gross in a few places, wasn't sure where they were going, if they were going to land the ending. The ending in the fifth I thought was good. But I'll be honest, it would have worked better for me if I didn't have to look up a name on Wikipedia or whatever. Oh, that's what's going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And particularly after the fourth issue and stuff, it not landing the ending as well as it should have, I was disappointed.
Well, yeah, that last page, the ending, that's what you had to look up?
Yep.
That's what I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
I didn't look it up, so I'm still thinking, what is that?
I've been reading X-Men since, I don't know, issue 180 or something back in the 80s and such, off the rack every month. And I've got a decent memory, not a perfect memory by any stretch for continuity and trivia and such, but I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, I still don't know who it is. You'll have to tell me. But
yeah.
But I'll tell you what, though. I left X-Deaths. I honestly feel bad for Moira, because I know what happened. I know the great sin she did, but I don't think she was a bad person. I don't think she was doing what she did for bad reasons, with bad intentions.
No, and we've got an entire couple of continuities, depending how you look at it, worth of character reference stories for her and stuff. She's a good person.
She's a good person, and they're just treating her like she is the worst of humanity. And she's got the ultimate punishment. I'm like, man, I honestly feel bad for her at this point.
I also don't know that how things ended for her made sense given what they had set up with this take on the character.
Yeah. So anyways, I am happy with the Immortal X-Men, though. Is that what it's called? The Immortal? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one I'm very happy with that spun out of this.
Yeah. They've been doing some decent stuff across the board. The X-Men, I don't think, is quite the heyday it had been, but is doing all right. Do you want to talk about Amazing Spider-Man, since it ended its volume?
Oh, yeah. You want to go first? You want me to go?
Oh, I'll go first. We got 3 issues. 91, you know, the whole thing about, what is this about Door Z? And I'm like, we get to the last page reveal, and I'm like, that's it? Who cares?
Yeah.
Too much build-up, not enough payoff on that issue, so, okay, it's competent, but not great. The next one, 92, was still very chapter-y-ish and not in a great way, because this whole Spider-Man and the Beyond Corporation, this whole thing was just, it playing on too long.
Hey, you get a lizard vampire, though.
Yeah, joy. And then 93, which completes the volume, was a decent story, but the end teaser for whatever was next didn't work great for me. The epilogue teasing a potential new Spider-Villain, I'm like, no, don't do that.
Yeah,
it was better than the other two, but I don't think that's saying much.
No, that's how I felt. The 93 was the best one of them. But at the same time, yeah, I felt like that's a bad direction to go. What are we doing here?
And there's good.
Yeah.
And I'd rather be good than the best if the best isn't all that good.
Yeah. They took it in a direction I was just like not happy with. I'm like, because I like that character.
Yeah. And the fact it took them, what, 18 issues to get to this point?
Yeah. It's not as bad as what, you know, Wally and Tom King, what he did. But I'm like, I feel like that's not who that character is either.
I think I could debate either way on that one.
Yeah, it's almost akin
it's
to that.
It's on par, yeah.
I'm just like, that's not the character. What are we doing? What is happening here?
Who thought this was a good idea? Who approved this story?
Yeah, what editor said, check, that marks the box.
Yeah, yeah.
I was very disappointed with that, while at the same time thinking that was the best of the ones we got, which is weird.
If that's not damning with faint praise, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it was disappointing.
Yeah. And the other things I don't mention are just kind of like, so-so. Or I didn't buy them.
Yeah, I got a couple other things, but nothing that it's, ooh, I've really got to talk about this type stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Shall we jump over to the other comics?
Yeah, let's go to the indies.
All right. I got 25 of these, one of which I'm not going to talk about because I haven't read it.
Oh.
Because I got Cassidy's Secret number 3, and I'll be honest, I was starting to think they were going to abort to trade on that. Because I haven't gotten 2. Apparently it may have come out, but I don't know if Diamond just didn't ship it or what, or so I got Eric chasing that down for me.
All right. Well, I got 30, so not far off. I've cut back a lot in the indie section.
Yeah. There was, for me, a very clear top of the stack.
I think I might know what it is.
I would hope so.
Is it Astro City? That was
it then? Is, yeah.
I had a feeling that was going to be your favorite.
It has been far too long since we've gotten an Astro City story. I'm looking forward to more. This was a riff on like the new Teen Titans going camping early in their run, and the story is evocative of various team groups, specifically the Titans, but not only the Titans, and it does it in a way without being like directly derivative of any particular team, and it really, I thought, captured the whole teen sidekick and whatnot bit as I would expect it to be in Astro City.
Yeah.
I've still got to figure out a way to cover Astro City on the podcast. I'm open to ideas as to what would be a good format for doing it, because I would like to just go through the full 100 however many issue run of the thing, issue by issue, and really pour into it, because it's just, I think, brilliant stuff.
I can't remember, but did you get the Metro book? Yeah, you did.
I did.
And we got, because Eric ordered 10 copies, we got the little signed thing, the book plate. So that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got that. So we have a good way to read it. And apparently they collected it a little bit different than how it came out, which I don't know why, but I'm sure it makes sense for some reason.
They had done a couple of arcs and single issue type stories and whatnot. So when they had originally collected it, they shuffled it around versus the order it originally came out in.
Oh, okay, cool.
And some of that's, I think, just to hit, you know, convenient trade paperback lengths.
Ah, all right. You want to hear some other really excellent ones that came out?
Sure.
Which, I don't think you got any of these. All right.
I don't know how much overlap there is in what we're getting in this section.
All right. First, I'm going to start up with one I know you didn't get. Sumerian, Hour of the Dragon, number 1. It is a Conan comic translated from Europe. Fantastic painted art in the comic. It was just gorgeous. And then the story itself is pretty good. If I'm not mistaken, it was taken from King Conan, where, you know, Conan's leading the army into battle, and I like those you know, King Conan story. Mm-hmm. So it's a good read too. And then the other one, which, you know, I love, it's back, kind of back because it was, they had like these little filler stories, Department of Truth number 17. It was a great issue. Again, this one goes back to World War II. We talk about how the English and the Nazis had their own kind of little departments of truth and tried to shape reality, and how the Nazis did it for quite a while, which is why they were winning. And we move on to the Nixon administration, where we get the lunar landing filmed. And what's happening is, okay, so you realize I said the Nixon administration. So they're filming the lunar landing, and they're going to make the people believe that this happened. And he was kind of ticked off. Kennedy's going to get the credit for this. Mm-hmm. And just saying how they could change reality, showing this type of stuff. And Nixon was kind of ticked off, you know, Kennedy get the credit. So he wants to, you know, hey, can't we do this bigger, reshape the election or the Vietnam War, the ending of that? And so, but the bigger you go, the harder it is to control. And so it's feeling around how you can control a small story. But when it gets bigger, it's hard, like the Nazis ran into. So just super clever how they're playing that whole aspect. I loved it.
Cool.
Another one that was a top shelf thing, there's, well, two other ones. The Lion and the Eagle, which is a big oversized magazine type thing. Garth Ennis' war book, terrific read. It came out from Aftershock. It's just Burma and basically the Japanese and the English and Indians fighting. But what's so funny is I watched this channel on YouTube called Kings and Generals, mm-hmm. and they're literally covering these battles, and I'm reading it here.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
So I'm reading a story about these battles that they're showing us, showing me tactically how they played out and stuff in the videos that I'm getting. And they have a charge of the Gurkhas, which, you know, these guys with machetes, it got pretty graphic. So you wouldn't have liked that. And then one other thing that came out from Dark Horse was Snyder and Capullo had We Have Demons. And I didn't know this, but I think they might have created it somewhere else, like maybe digitally or something. I don't know. But they published it at Dark Horse, and it's only a 3-issue mini, but it reads like Spawn a little bit with the words on the side, and you get the pictures and the info dumps and stuff like that. So the layout felt very Spawnish, but much better than Spawn. No offense to Todd McFarlane there, but it was a Comixology original that now they're publishing in print at Dark Horse. So I thought the title was very verbose because they're giving you so much information. You know, demons, cursing, blood and guts goes on in here. So there's that type of stuff. But it has a lot of Hellboy in it, a lot of Spawn in it, and just really fun. I thought it was a terrific issue. So if you like Snyder and Capullo and you like Hellboy or you like Spawn, you'll love this. It felt like it's Spawn and Hellboy done even better, maybe, than those individual issues in this 3-issue mini.
Cool.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm sorry. I went for a while.
No, it's all right. It's all right. For me, the stuff that was pretty good, Mighty Morphin 17, which is part of the Power Ranger stuff. They've just come out of a major arc in which the command center was destroyed. Now they've got to go do something about it. And apparently it's a standard Altarian outpost, so they're going to another planet to go steal an unused one. Like, that's not particularly heroic, but okay. Interesting way to get around the problem.
All right, cool.
Power Ranger Universe number 4. It's taken until the end of the 4th issue for these people to actually morph. I mean, they've done it a time or two, but this time, you know, in a stable format, and we get to see the Die Ranger suits finally used for a Power Ranger team.
Ah.
And it's interesting because there's a Black Ranger on this team. Why is this interesting? Only one of these suits was ever used in Power Rangers, and that was the white one for the original White Ranger, Tommy Oliver and such.
Okay.
So the fact that we've now got a Black Ranger version of this color suits, which didn't happen in the Sentai stuff, I think it's just kind of fun.
Cool.
So they're building out the franchise a bit. I'm really hoping, because they've done a couple of action figures based on the comics and such, I'd like to see the Omega Rangers get some action figures. I'd like to see this group of Rangers get some action figures. I think the Morphinot or whatever is almost certainly going to get one, because it's just a repaint of an existing action figure. So I'm hoping there's some good synergy there with Hasbro and such.
Very cool.
We got the first issue of Star Trek Discovery Adventures in the 32nd Century, number 1. And the entire first issue focused on Grudge, Book's cat from Discovery. And I'm like, is that really going to work? It worked surprisingly well. I thought it was a good read.
Interesting.
I mean, not one that I would have, like I said, expected to be that way. Seven Secrets continues to be a fun read.
Oh, yeah, Seven Secrets.
Hope we get some details about that final page reveal, because it's like, okay, what's going on there?
Yeah, we got the big reveal, and it feels like it's really close to wrapping up right now.
It is, because number 17 was the penultimate issue in the solicitations, so I'm thinking it ends with 18.
Okay, that makes sense, because I was reading that, and I was like, okay, with that being revealed, okay, this has to be close to being done.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Tom Taylor. He's got plenty of stuff he's doing these days, so.
Yeah, he's DC exclusive, too. He's got to start writing over there.
Got a lot of things he's coming out with, so yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any other ones?
Most of the other stuff was either just okay or one or two. It's like, yeah, not so good.
Well, I'll tell you real quick a couple things that were good. Crimson Cage from AWA, very good. Crossover 12, quick question. Did you like it?
That was actually probably the lowest rated thing for me in the indie section.
I wondered.
It had some good moments, but there are a few pages that were just overly gory.
Yeah.
It seemed to get even more meta, if that's possible.
Very much so.
And, you know, more gratuitous gore like this we got in this issue, I'll drop the title. They went overboard.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I was like, they took that one creation and it went after the creator. I was like, wow. All right.
Was that the issue where I think they even acknowledged, yeah, I went this way and it wasn't a good idea, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, okay, AWA, I'm kind of mostly all in on that stuff. I think I'm getting everything. You didn't get the title Hit Me, did you?
I did not.
Okay, that one was one that I think Brawlinator posted something on the Slack, but I actually picked it up because I get all their stuff. It isn't what I thought. I saw the cover and I expected a Vegas style heist when I saw the, you know, the picture and everything. It is a crime story, but it delves heavily into BDSM world and not like the 50 Shades of Grey like or Sunstone like sexy kind of stuff, but like almost stomach turning, like people being punched and beat up. Mm. And I guess some people are really into that.
And the title, what was that again? Hit Me?
Hit Me, yeah.
It deals with people getting hit? Hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they do have solicitation things along with the covers of these things.
I need to read better, not just say everything from Publisher A.
Just saying.
Well, apparently, I found out something interesting. Christina Faust and Priscilla Petratus, I don't know, apparently they used to be sex workers. And they're comic creators. I didn't know that. They delved into BDSM world, so they were writing about stuff they knew about. I was like, oh my God, that made it all the way more real. I don't know
if that makes it better or worse.
I know. I was like, but it wasn't overly gratuitous, but I think in another issue or two, it could be. And so that kind of worries me because I pre-ordered them. We'll see. Or I'll see. I may not comment.
That's okay.
All right, Magic Order 2, number 6, the last issue. Did you like the way it ended?
We also got number 5 this month.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. We did get 5. 5 I thought was okay. 6 I thought was better.
Both I thought were okay. 5 was kind of eventful, but chaptery.
Yeah.
And I was a little out of the loop because it'd been like a month since I read the previous issue, which shouldn't be that much time to take me out of the story.
Yeah.
6 I thought was a decent ending, but I don't think I need to come back for more if they do another miniseries. I think I'm out.
They kind of said they're coming back with another one pretty soon. And I'm just like, I feel the same way. I think it was too far that I lost something and they didn't bring me up to speed for this story. And so I feel like I'm lost. Like I could read it in trade maybe one day.
I think it's a little of the story momentum wasn't there for me between the previous volume and this one.
Yeah.
This didn't get me back into the story. But I think moreover, the premise itself is not one that is in my sweet spot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, dead center of my wheelhouse. It's not totally out of it either, but it's not enough for me to say, you know, oh, Magic Order number 3, number 1. Sure. It's like, nah, at that point, it's like, yeah, have fun. Whoever likes it, great. I don't need to read it.
No, I understand.
It's not bad, just not for me.
That's kind of how I'm starting to feel with it. One other thing that, okay, I know you're not getting Saga. I got 56, and I think I mentioned it was okay. 57 I got, and it's kind of like that same thing. I'm realizing I think the book's lost its charm. I think the creators have changed who they are. The same jokes don't always work that they used to use. And not that they were working terrifically before. I mean, some of them were good, but you know, later on, like around issues 50 or late 40s, it started to lose me a little bit. The whimsy's gone. And this one, I'm just like, it doesn't seem like it's not a fun title to read anymore.
Well, I think part of it is when they set out originally, they were going to write a comic called Saga, and it became what it became.
Yep.
Now, they're coming back to write saga that is what it was.
Yeah.
Or was what it is, or however you want to phrase that. And there's preconceived expectations on the audience's part, on their part, and they're trying to presumably step back into the same pond and recapture the magic or what have you. And that can be done, but it's tough.
I think it's tough, and I think it's almost been too long. And I know there's some diehards that love it. And I used to be one of the diehards who, I wouldn't say love it, but I always liked it. And now I'm just feel like I can see it, and I'm like, I'm just not enjoying it as much. I'm like, it's lost its charm.
Yeah, I didn't come back. I was ready to be done with it when it paused.
And I'm contemplating, because I have all these issues that of just stopping and picking it up in a trade, maybe, and rereading it, or just not revisiting it and being done with it. Don't know. And the other one that I wanted to mention, because I never mention it that much, and people sometimes wonder why we don't mention title X, Y, or Z.
Because we'd be here all night.
Yes. What's the furthest place from here? Number 5. I have read it since issue number 1. They're really big issues. So every time I get one of these things, they're like 54 or 56 pages, but they're not super dialogue heavy, so they read quicker than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of breaks in there. But I felt like, since the first issue, I loved it. It hooked me. There's a mystery. We're going along. It's great. It's getting more and more weird, but it still has that hook there. But it's not as good as it was at the first issue. So if it doesn't get better in the next 2 issues, I'm probably going to drop it. But right now, it's still on my list, still has that hook there. And it's in a very bizarre post-apocalyptic mystery. What's going on? We have no clue type book.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of it. And then there's a lot of meh. I'm reading it, but it's just going through the motions.
Yeah, most of the other stuff I had was in the, it's all right. Some of it, not so much.
Yeah.
But there's not that much where it's like, I just shouldn't have gotten this.
Yeah. I'm to that point, too. I've cut so much. I used to have 40-something titles from Dandy. I have 30 now. And the only one that I didn't like was a one-shot from Stillwater the Escape.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Stillwater's just gotten really horrible. It started off really strong, and then it got worse as it went.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm almost done with that one, but it is what it is. It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm getting more discerning. I mean, I've become a refined consumer of comics. I've refined my palate like a wine drinker.
Well, if I'm becoming more discerning or just more jaded.
Yeah, more jaded. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
I mean, there are some people out there that love everything under the sun, and more power to them. I wish I could be that way, but I'm not.
Yes and no, because honestly, I have too much stuff and I wouldn't know how to store it all if I felt that whimsy with every book that I read. My gosh, I don't need that.
Well, and just because I decide to drop something doesn't mean it's bad. It just means I don't need to keep getting it.
Well, it's true. Because, like, Saga's not working for me right now, but I know sure as can be, there's going to be 10 or 20 or 1,000 people listening to this podcast that are going to be like, that's the best book. What are you talking about? So,
well, it's the best book for them.
For them, yeah.
And so, there's nothing right or wrong about it. If it's great for them, they should definitely keep getting it. But if it's not right for me, I shouldn't get it.
Exactly. Yeah. So
and vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. So opinions are, like anything. Everyone has one, and no one's is better than the other. So I just try to tell you guys.
Far. No, I'm kidding.
Just try to tell you what I like,
Exactly. We're trying to basically say what we like and why, so people can use that and say, well, my tastes are either like James's or John's or not, and therefore I should... Maybe something I love, you're going to hate, and something I hate, you're going to love, and you can calibrate that way.
Yeah, like, for example, you love everything that's Power Rangers, and me, I don't know what's going on in Power Rangers, and so I don't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because I don't have that background and the love for it, and I don't have the lore. And the same thing with Conan for me. You don't like Conan, you're never going to like Conan. It's just how it is.
Yeah, and there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's just, what baggage and background do we bring into it that's going to make us predisposed to like or dislike something?
Yeah, and even though you don't like Conan, I still like you.
Good. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I don't judge you for not liking Power Rangers, at least not too much. Not kidding.
A lot of love there.
They're brightly covered. You can tell them apart. How pragmatic is that? Just saying.
Very true. Very true.
All right, so we got some questions.
Okay.
Let's go through those real quick. First, from Dr. Mo, did you get the Wolverine-centric event, X Lives of Wolverine, and X Deaths of Wolverine? You did not mention either series in February Spotlight episode, but the events writer, Ben Percy. I mean, we talked about him this time. I got both, generally enjoyed them, with the exception of X Deaths of Wolverine number 4. And as to why did we not talk about them last time? If we talked about everything, we'd be here all day.
Yeah, and I will say for me, I liked X Deaths more than X Lives. That's just me. That's what I like. I like the whole Moira thing and all the impact of that going forward versus the jumping around the time.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I would definitely, yeah. And then we got a couple of questions from Jason Z. Can you guys talk about Silver Surfer Rebirth series some? With Ron Mars and Ron Lim on the character, does the book feel like the 90s comic or more in line with the Silver Surfer Black characterization? The early 90s around Infinity Gauntlet era, so thank you for that time reference, was his favorite version of the character.
Okay. You want to talk about it? Because you were getting it too, right?
Yes, I am getting it. And I thought issue 3 we got this time was a little middle chaptery, but kind of expect that from a miniseries. Overall, I'm really enjoying the series. I think it is along the lines of what Ron Mars and Ron Lin did back in the day with the character.
Yep.
Now, I say that not having reread that stuff from when it came out and I was picking it up off the rack in the 90s. So, you know, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but it feels in line with that. I cannot give a reference point to Silver Surfer Black because I have not read that.
Yeah, I read Silver Surfer Black. This is very different than the Black, and this is very kind of that retro feel, like that older stuff. And so if you like that, I think you'll like this title.
Yeah, I definitely would put it in the retro feel kind of group of books.
So I noticed they're starting to do a lot of these retro comics, like stuff from the 90s over at Marvel. So some of it's working for me, some of it's not, but this is definitely one in the retro category.
As we talked about, there's some stuff where it's characters from back in the 90s, and there's others where it may as well be issues from back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Big difference.
Huge difference. Jason C., if you guys got Venom Lethal Protector, how's the story? And does it feel like the early days of the character from the 90s?
I felt like I was reading a 90s comic.
Yeah, I don't know that that's a good thing.
So literally, it's the original creator, the original writer. Is that Michelini, I think it was? Or
I think so.
Yeah, it was a fun story, decent story. The art was good. If you are feeling nostalgic and you want to read something like Venom back then, because honestly, the current Venom, where he was floating around in space and all that stuff, it was not working for me. The current stuff that is being issued by, I think it's Ram V is writing it. So if you want the retro feel, it is a decent story. I will say it's not like A-level material, but it's good. It's just going to feel like you're reading a 90s book. So go into it knowing that.
Interesting. I didn't pick it up, so can't really comment on it.
Yeah, so that's my feel.
And then is there any place that lists what comics you guys are getting month to month to be able to gear any questions towards the books you're actually reading? Wow, what a great question.
Yeah.
I'll answer this because I think I've got a better answer than you might.
Okay.
I know I have an answer at least. I'm posting unboxing videos each week and another one of me scanning the books into Comic Collector. I post a link to those videos in the new releases channel on Slack. You can also find those videos on the website under the new comic book shipments and new comic book inventorying in the other section of the website menu. So it's pretty easy to go find them. I've got about 2 years worth of unboxing videos. I've been doing it every week since comics started up after the shutdown.
Yeah. I actually watch your videos and sometimes I'll say, hey, I'm missing that issue. And I send a message to Eric right away.
Yeah, I found them, you know, it takes a little bit of time to go do them and such. I'm not going to say I'm going to do them forever, but I've had a few other attempts I've made in the past of here's what I'm getting every week and such. But a lot of it, why those didn't continue is I put them out there, I hear nothing, and it's like, why spend the time on this?
Yeah. I mean, I could copy and paste my stuff from my order form onto the Slack channel, but I don't know if, you know, it doesn't tell you what week they're coming out. And for me, it's like a surprise when it comes. I forget what I ordered. I know that's horrible to say because you're way more organized, but for me, it's like, oh, look what I got. Goody. So I'm not as prepared, so it's very hard for me to know until I get it. I could post it in the Slack when I get it, maybe take a picture of them. Maybe that's it. Maybe that'll work.
Well, and Drew, I think, is pretty good about posting on the forum what been getting every week.
Maybe I should start doing that, because I know Jason uses the forum too. I'll post a list of what I got, and I'll put a link in the Slack, and then you can ask some questions on it if you want to. I'll try to remember.
Yeah, again, I've got my stuff on the video and stuff. If you want those to continue, you know, at least some words of encouragement wouldn't hurt. Just saying.
I love your videos, honestly.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I like the unboxing one more than the scanning, but that's just my preference.
Yeah, for me, I would probably get my stuff unboxed sooner if I wasn't doing those videos, because it takes a little bit to set up to do them and whatnot. Oh. And then once I've done that, it's just I got to scan them in anyways. I don't know if I'll keep doing the scanning ones or not.
Sometimes you have some really choice comments, too, that make me laugh.
Sometimes I editorialize more than others. That is definitely true.
You make my day when I watch sometimes the comments.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Final question from Jason Z. Any thoughts on the Devil's Reign miniseries? Would you recommend it or any of the side miniseries? Also, James, did you get Devil's Reign Moon Knight one-shot? How do you feel his character was utilized during the storyline?
The Devil's Reign Moon Knight one-shot, I don't remember it very well because I read it over a month ago, but it was good. I remember I liked the story. I thought it worked well. The Devil's Reign miniseries itself, I thought was fantastic. I thought overall this Chip Zdarsky run on Daredevil has been terrific. The event was cool. The impact coming out of it, there's two or three big status quo changes coming out of that. And if you want to know what they are, John will tell you afterwards. So one of them's really pretty, wow, boom.
No, that's cool. I've heard good things about it. I've heard good things about his run on Daredevil. I had just bowed out of Daredevil around that time. They'd flipped to a new volume when I was looking to cut back, and it was an easy place to cut. Whether that was a smart cut or not, probably not, don't know. But again, I enjoyed the Devil's Reign X-Men stuff, not so much with Superior 4, but like I said, I skipped out the main event.
Yeah, I only read the X-Men one, and I thought that was good. I didn't read the Spider-Man one or the Frightful 4 or Fantastic 4 or whatever it was called, the 4.
Superior 4.
Superior 4, that one.
Yeah, that
whatever
one.
4 it was, I didn't read that.
So yeah, those were the questions we got. I don't know if I'm going to start another thread explicitly on the forum for it. If you guys want to start a thread for questions on the Monthly Comic Spotlight, it's fine. Or I may just put one up there for, you know, one thread to where I don't have to keep creating one every month. If I do that, be sure to put what, you know, month you're talking about. And I'll try to check it at the end of each month before we record and such. Yeah. Or you can email us or direct message us the questions and such.
I want to say thank you, Dr. Mo and Jason, for the questions. It's kind of cool to get people asking stuff. Mm-hmm. Versus just speaking into the void, you know, every week. It's kind of cool.
Well,
like
Jason's also sent in some questions for Legion Spotlight. Some great questions for the episode 2000 coming up.
Yeah.
We just got some this evening from Dr. Mo for that episode.
Yeah, really cool.
So definitely appreciate the feedback and such. Keep it coming. And then the other thing we had been asked to do, and again, don't know how often I'll keep doing this or not, but we'll do it this time. Upcoming recordings. I've got a bunch out here. Let's see. The next thing we're going to record is going to be episode 2000. Again, we're taking questions for those. But this episode we're recording right now is going up on Monday, April 18th. And on Tuesday, the 19th, is when we're recording episode 2000. And it'd be nice to have a little time to look at the questions, make sure, you know, we understand them, can read them, etc., and maybe think about some answers for them. So if you have any questions for them, get them in immediately. You know, because otherwise it'll be too late.
Yeah.
And of course, these plans for upcoming recordings, all subject to change. I've had a couple of things change in the last month or so for a variety of reasons. April 26th, you and I are going to get together and record on Gun Honey, that 4-issue series.
Yep.
Then the following Monday, May 2nd, I'm currently scheduled with Eric to go through the first 6 issues of Eternals.
Oh, nice.
And then on May 3rd, the following night, that Tuesday, you and I are going to get together for a Q&A session on Crisis, so the big DC events and such. Again, we're taking questions for those. We've got a couple of good ones from, I think they were from Jason. I'd have to go look. From when we did the...
I think they were from Jason, yeah.
From when we did the Crisis on Infinite Earths back issue spotlights.
Yeah.
I need to do a little bit of research on that, just to jog my memory. And then May 9th, I'm getting together with Eric. We're going to do Checkmate 1 through 6. And then we're coming back on the 10th of May to do the next month monthly comic spotlight.
Yep.
Now, some of these episodes are going to come out pretty quick, like the episode 2000 is going to go out on May 6th. Some of these are actually going to be a little while before they go out. I'm trying to work a little in advance on a couple of things because I've got some stuff over the summer. It's going to keep me occupied. So again, trying to get a little ahead on the schedule.
Yeah. So we both have a little vacay coming up.
So yeah. Yeah.
It'll be fun. Yeah. So I'm ready for those. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. Anything else? We good.
We're good.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.